I have to go and see my friends baby more and get more comfortable, because I did not grow up with babies. I was the youngest. My twin brother and I were the youngest in the family. One niece who feels like a cousin because she's basically my age. And then like nobody, until she finally had a baby relatively recently, there was like no babies in the family, no cousins. So one of my coworkers where I used to work brought her baby into work a lot, and I was taking developmental psychology at the time, so that was actually really fun because I could be like, oh, the baby's doing the thing, and she's a psychologist. Uh-huh. So she was like, yeah, he's doing the thing, isn't it cool? But that was like my only experience with babies, so I'm realizing like I'm kind of awkward with my friend's baby, or like even if she's like, you want to hold him, I'm like, I don't want to drop him, how am I supposed to do this?
It's funny, I was also the youngest and didn't really have younger cousins that I saw with any regularity. So I guess I didn't really have much with like of anything with babies growing up. But I guess I just sort of eased into it with first, you know, my wife's brother had a baby and we would take care of him sometimes for them in Philly. And then my sister had her baby and I, you know, they paid me to take care of him until he was 18 months. I think it was from like 7 or 8 months to 18 months when he could go to daycare. And because like the difference between infant, like really infant daycare and mm-hmm. 18 months is dramatic, both like cost wise and in terms of like what they need to do. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I bridged that gap, and that was a good experience and also just harrowing. I feel like that just dragged me kicking and screaming from like I'm still kind of a college kid to now I have to be a real adult because I'm taking care of this child, and like having to wake up at 6 in the morning or whatever to get there at 6:30, roll out of bed and drive down there.
Right.
And then, you know, I was broken in a little bit for my own baby.
Yeah, no, that's helpful. And there's nothing like being responsible for a kid, or like for me, when I was like still in college, I was working with at that point mostly teens on the autism spectrum. And we would like do outings with them and we'd do like woodworking, all this kind of cool stuff. A lot of stuff that I was not sure about, but I have to be the person who knows what's going on, and because I'm the staff person in this situation and I'm the adult, even though I was only like 19 or 20 when I started, they were like 13 and 14. So I'm the adult. And like, there was a point where we were on a trip to like a train museum and we were in the place where you're, where they were like working on the trains and we had to climb a ladder, and I hate heights, but they hate heights even more. And I, so I was like, my boss couldn't even tell that I hate heights until after when I told him, because it was like, all right, I have to be on for the students. Or like hiking down. I'm really, I hate hiking down slopes. I actually have like dyspraxia, which is like it's like dyslexia for movement. I can, just like somebody with dyslexia, like can learn to read well. I can, like, I learned to dance pretty well, but I'm not naturally coordinated. And I have a bit sort of remaining fear of like slopes, because you need a fair bit of coordination to not like slip down a slope, which most people don't even really think about. But, and a lot of people on the autism spectrum have dyspraxia. So like most of the students have dyspraxia, in this group. And some of the other staff who were also like college kids were just like charging ahead on the hike. And I was like, why are you guys being such slowpokes? I'm going, okay, put your foot here, put your foot here, because I had trouble with it. I knew what they were feeling, and so I could sort of coax them down. And then I went over to the other staff and was like, guys, chill. this is hard for some people. Okay. Not everyone is a mountain goat in terms of their coordination.
Literally my last name. Cabrera is like goat herder.
Yeah, you'd be leaving me in the dust on a hike. I'm still that. I mean, like, my husband got me the like walking sticks, like two of them, actually really does help. But I'm still like, can you be right in front of me? Well, if it's a particular, if it's a regular slope, I'm fine. But if it's like a particularly gnarly one, then I still like to have some assurances of where I'm going to be. When I was a little kid, I couldn't even do stepping stones. I couldn't dive off a diving board or even just off the side of the pool. I could not do a somersault. Definitely not do a cartwheel. Probably still couldn't do a cartwheel. I would hold. I had no sense of where my body was in space. So if you gave me like a glass of water and I got distracted, I would just spill it. Like,
oof.
Because I'm like, it was pretty bad. So occupational therapy and actually ballet were really helpful. Ballet is really hard, so you think that would be bad, but it's also very controlled and the same every time. And I wasn't trying to be a little prima ballerina, right? I was okay being mediocre. But I wanted to be able to at least do the movements, and they talk you through everything, and they build up the movements through small pieces because it's hard. Instead of just expecting you to just look and follow, they like, you're going to move exactly this way, and we're going to sort of hold your leg and show you what to do. And that was actually extremely helpful for building up my like ability to tell where my body is in space.
Nice.
And so, yeah, if you have a kid with dyspraxia, occupational therapy was very helpful, but also for me, it was ballet. For my brother, it was martial arts. Like,
I could see
it's
that,
not a team sport, so you're not like losing and feeling bad because you're losing. and you're not having balls fly at your face.
But I feel like depending on the martial art, like, they really emphasize it not being about winning or losing, you know?
Right. Yeah. And he did a lot of the forms. He was never very good at sparring, but he did just being able to go through the forms.
I think Aikido does a lot of like.
Yeah. Aikido's a good one too, because it's all about just like, it's like trying to be nonviolent. You just redirect the aggressor's momentum against them, basically, is the whole point of Aikido. Yeah.
My kind of martial art, for sure.
there was a sort of an aging hippie teacher at my high school who, like Vietnam War vet, had one of those like Volkswagen vans from the era. The whole thing was probably doing pot on the weekends, you know, maybe not even just the weekends, but he had gotten really into a lot of like Eastern philosophy and also like Aikido and stuff. So in a like legitimately respectful way. So he had a very popular Aikido class at the high school.
Nice.
You could do that instead of PE. I did dance instead of PE, which was great. Loved that. Or you could do Aikido. There were lots of options. Or you could play a sport. And it didn't have to like deal with locker rooms and basketballs flying at my head.
I didn't want to do soccer in high school because I didn't like the kids on the team. Well, particular kids. But I did play tennis and fencing because we had like Olympic fencing.
Nice.
That was my get it. Although I feel like I still remember doing some gym, but maybe I'm just getting, maybe all the school is blending together and it wasn't actually in high school. But
yeah, some high schools have, I think like the public high school around me still had gym, but then you could also like do a sport. But I went to a private school, which you just needed to do something physical and sign off that you had done it. Mm-hmm. And that was great because I had hated PE in middle school. Even though I will say I had very nice PE teachers who were super like understanding of me. And growing up a girl, I think there was less pressure to be good at PE. Nobody really cared. Whereas like my brother was also not good at PE and people cared more. It wasn't like a horrible experience, but it's just bad to just continually be like picked last for things because you're and like my parents put me in soccer camp when I was little for like less than a week, and then they picked me up and I was like hiding from the ball.
Oh no.
And they were like
oh no.
They were like, ah, this is the wrong camp for this child.
No, I played a lot of youth soccer because my dad's from Guatemala. Of course I played soccer.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the local youth league, right? Because they feel like for soccer in particular, they do this thing where people are playing well before high school, right? And so you've got the youth league going up through, I think it actually even went up through eighth grade, even though the middle school, seventh and eighth grade, like started having, you could play for the middle school. But, and I really enjoyed that. I just didn't want to play for the high school.
I mean, it makes a huge difference who's like the dance sort of class, like group at the school was very different my junior and senior years than it had been my freshman sophomore years, just like because of who was in the different classes, because
mm-hmm.
It was kind of all 4 years together, and it made a huge difference when it's a relatively small group, like yeah, if there's people who are toxic to you in a group, then that's going to be a problem even if the activity is good. So
I don't know if this was actually true. My dad said he made me play soccer and be midfielder because he coached my team, so that I would strengthen my lungs because I had really bad asthma my whole life, basically. Mm. And so it was just like, the running will strengthen your lungs, which was true, I guess. You know, I had to bring my inhaler with me, but
I don't know much about soccer, but midfield you're going everywhere, so you're just running.
And obviously I wouldn't have been doing this much, but like a professional midfielder runs like half a marathon in a game.
Oh my god.
On average or something. Yeah, because you're just running up and down the field the whole time. Eventually, I feel like as I got older, I switched to more of a center defense or sweeper, mm-hmm. right? Which is just I am the brick wall. You do not get past me. It's like it's the midfielder of defense. Yeah. But
dare we say the blob of tar of defense.
Indeed. Yeah. But in middle school for a bit, I was like playing baseball and soccer and fencing and tennis and guitar and piano, and it was too many things.
Yeah.
So in high school I did less.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a lot of kids sort of focus more in high school because it's that each one starts demanding more time. So unless you're like sometimes the really athletic kids will play like one sport per season,
mm-hmm.
but you know, like we had a kid who played basketball and volleyball, you know, and something else, but even that's like a lot. But some of these kids, you know, they want to get into a top college, so they're doing, you know, my AP calculus student who actually goes to a different school but is just taking AP calculus with us. is like doing an internship with like a local sort of like legal firm and actually like helping them with some of their cases. Plus she's like in mock trial. Plus she's on the lacrosse team. Plus she's taking like 5 APs. She's really bright. But like, it's crazy.
I never was like in the circles to have ended up in something like debate, but looking back, God, I wish I did debate.
You would have been great at debate.
yeah, there are a few things. Because I remember in my like junior year English class, we would have these discussions on some of the books, and I got some extra credit for my performance in some of those. In general, but you know what? I didn't talk as much when I was a kid for reasons. So, just like it took very specific circumstances for me to actually talk, I guess. But,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm amazed that I did mock trial because I had a stutter. But I would just like really practice so that I could speak it, and I really enjoyed it. And I also was like, okay, I shouldn't really be a trial lawyer, because if these were real people, that's just like, it was really fun as a puzzle, and I could tell that it would not be the right environment for me when it's not a puzzle, right? Mm-hmm. The type of like, let's go through the like testimony and documents and like with a fine tooth comb and like really break it apart and see how it applies to the law and like try to find holes in the witness testimony. Like, I really enjoyed that. I was a little depressed by the fact that like pathos mattered more than logos often. but I learned to exploit that by my senior year. We had a couple of actual lawyers who were parents coaching us.
Of course.
And that was fun. They would like host us at their house and like help us. It was a couple of defense attorneys. They were part of who was telling me like, no, the like super nerdy details are not at a certain point, stop, the jury doesn't care. Right. Just like, what's the story? The jury wants to know what the story is. And yeah, that was a lot of fun. I feel like I would totally rock the LSAT, but struggle in law school. Like, that type of testing, totally how my brain works. But having to get so many papers in constantly. I think I would remember the stuff I'm supposed to remember, but getting in all those papers constantly would be problematic for me.
School is problematic for me. I switched to art, and that was for a reason.
Mm-hmm. At school does not get at, like, it's a different skill than just being able to think, like it's not, and being able to produce stuff.
It's not quite the same skill. If I were to go back for an educational experience, it would be like an apprenticeship. I think that is the way that I learn best, right? It's like, show me how to do the thing. I will now do the thing, whether it's, to be an electrician or, a plumber or a mechanic, or like I would do some kind of trade skill.
Yeah.
I think that's why art worked for me, right? It's like, okay, teach me how to do this jewelry making process, and now I will do that jewelry making process.
Yeah. Which doesn't get enough respect on how like much craft there is in that.
Yeah, I may actually, 16 years from now, God knows what the world is going to be. But like when Leah is done with school, I may be like, so this year, you know, you can take tests or whatever you need to do to think about college in that sense, but you're just gonna like try things and see what you want to do so that you can pick an applicable institution and like direction. Because I don't think college is actually good for figuring out what you want to do.
I certainly enjoyed trying lots of different classes, but it's definitely only, it doesn't give you a sense of what the jobs are like.
Yeah.
Like, I think there's something to be said just for the liberal education. Like, I'm glad I took sociology just to know about that intellectual history. I wish I had taken economics just to, like, I've picked it up since then, but I wish I had that, like, academic background. Of course, that's kind of me. I like having an academic background. Mm-hmm. I didn't take computer science until really late, like my last semester. And I was like, wait a minute, I should have taken this earlier. But that is almost more like a trade. Like computer science mm-hmm. is.
Yeah.
There is an academic computer science, like theoretical computer science. But what they're teaching you in intro is really kind of like how to do the stuff, not the theory of the stuff. It's more like engineering, I guess, than it is like math. And then there's some that are more like math. And I never got to the like really theoretical computer science stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I took more later. But I also, I mean, for what I actually use for what I do, I definitely use the psychology classes I took, but also just like the whole time that I was in school, I was working at this nonprofit for students on the autism spectrum, which had a makerspace, and I was building stuff. And then the students were going to community college classes, so I was going with them and learning how to work with them. And I was basically, my mom's a child and adolescent psychiatrist, so I was learning from her how to work with students, because I would talk mm-hmm. to her about my students and she would give me advice and about like how to form that sort of therapeutic alliance. So even though I'm not a therapist, right, you'd still have to have a rapport with a student. And I was using my therapist as supervision a lot. In fact, recently she's been like, hey, stop talking about your students so we can actually do some therapy. I see what you're doing there. You're evading the hard stuff by being like, hey, can you help me with my student? But I learned a lot from using my neuropsychologist therapist as supervision. I paid for it. I mean, but at first my parents paid for it and then I paid for it. But like that apprenticeship, I learned even more than just like from my psychology classes. Mm-hmm. And that's also what showed me that I wanted to do this work more than my, like, I found my psychology classes really, really interesting, but like, I'm especially cognitive psychology, but especially the education stuff. I didn't love most of the education classes I took, except for structured literacy. Like the ones I took on math education, I didn't like the classes I took on math education, but I clearly like mm-hmm. math education. Like it's just watching other people do it and learning from other people who've done it and then just doing it a lot myself and being like, this works and this does not work has been more meaningful than like the strategies for math class I just took.
Well, it is getting
real late, especially for you.